Hi, welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen, and I'm here today with Lindsay Friedman. Lindsay began as a nursing assistant and multi-generational caregiver, and she's now the founder of Care Bloom and LT Care Nav. We'll have to hear about that. Building solutions that help families navigate long-term care and connect with the right support. And man, I'm telling you, I'm so glad you're here because this era of life is they call it the sandwich generation, right? You just finished taking care of your kids and then your parents need your help. So welcome. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, this is a challenging time for women, especially, right? This age throws new stuff at us that I don't think we were all prepared for.
Yeah. Or most of us, I think, especially, I guess all of us are Gen X now, you know. We always thought that we'd never make it this far. It was hard to picture, right?
Oh, for sure. The years passed by quickly.
And well. So tell me a little bit about, so you started off as, what is a multi-generational caregiver? Is that what I was talking about, sandwich kind of thing?
Yes. But I actually started off the first time I was a caregiver for my grandma. And I would sort of still say sandwich generation because my daughter was really young when I started to care for my grandma. My mom has MS, and so it would have been hard for her to do it on her own. So I started that journey, and it was the most rewarding experience. I loved my grandma so much. So I had that time, but my daughter was there, and it was a really different dynamic for us. It was very joyful. My grandma was glad to have my daughter. She was very young, so I could have her with us, and it was a really wonderful caregiving experience. I mean, there were definitely challenges that all families face. But as the years went on, actually, my daughter's chronically ill, the same one who was there. And so I have become my daughter's caregiver, which is why I look so tired today, because she's having a really rough week. And I also became my mom and dad's caregiver. So I'm actually now, my grandma passed, my daughter's older, but I'm now sandwiched between them. And besides just parenting, I'm caregiving for both generations.
This sounds intense.
I can't, like today, it, today's, yeah. This week has been a little more intense, but you know, it just shows you what you're capable of. And I know I'll get through it. But I think families have to understand, there are hard days for everybody, even people who are experts and have handled it. Because I actually was a caregiver when I was younger. That was my career. So I really have a lot of experience. And it is still hard. And there are still challenges that emotionally drain you in a different way than when you're doing it professionally.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why you founded your own caregiving company, because you started off as a caregiver and you have all this experience with caregiving.
Yeah. So my job, actually, after being a nursing assistant, I actually went into technology and had a couple failures, companies that didn't survive. It is par for the course. It teaches you great stuff. So I'm definitely not looking back on them. It's like, oh, that was horrible. I learned a lot. But my second company that was shut down was right before I became my grandma's caregiver. And with that, I went into it with the tech background, taking care of my grandma. And I was seeing things that really, I was like, technology could solve this. What could we do? And what kind of really drove the inception of Care Bloom was I was really fortunate to have people be able to help at night, and they were sleeping with her in her room at night, or they were supposed to be. And my grandma would say, they're not really there. And I'd ask the aides, and they're like, no, we're there. And then one night, my grandma got out of bed, she fell, she broke her femur. And so, you know, I was like, human accountability was not enough.
Yeah.
There's no on this one. And, you know, cameras take away dignity. Like, my grandma would not have had any privacy in the room.
Yeah.
So I set out to build something that would have allowed me to see and understand where my grandma was, where the aide was, and really built this beautiful tool that's discreet, it's private. It allows us to really track everyone's behaviors around the house. We can ensure tasks are done that are being assigned. We can track behavior changes in your loved one. So the incident with my grandma and the experiences I've seen were what kind of drove me to first start Care Bloom, because it felt no family should have to go through what we went through.
So I'm a tech person. Tell me about the tech. That sounds, is it like a Bluetooth kind of a thing? Yeah. Yeah.
So part of that is, yeah. So we actually have our own watch. It looks like a Fitbit. So a lot of people are like, oh, why can't you use an Apple Watch? Well, an Apple Watch can say they're in the house. I can tell you if they're sitting on the toilet or they're in the shower, or if they're stuck in the basement, or if they haven't gotten out of bed, or yeah. if they haven't moved from the couch, or if they haven't toileted or taken their medication. So we use the watch as well as two other devices that are installed in the room. And we kind of triangulate location and take data from the watch and send it up to what's a gateway that gets delivered to the cloud. So it is a hardware product. And
right.
it's got more hardware than we would love it to have. But if you really want to be accurate on these things, that's how you have to do it right now. Like a single motion sensor or something to hopefully catch a fall because you're listening. We wanted something that was really, really accurate. And that's what we came up with. And it is 99% accuracy of where someone is and what they're doing.
So if the people say, I woke up grandma and changed her in the middle of the night and her device didn't move, you know that that didn't happen.
Yes. So it's movement on her device. There's also a tag that the caregiver wears. And the nice thing is we know if you've taken them off. So you can't just put them next to each other. We know there's a lot of location and time. We have a lot of things that go on to kind of verify tasks. But yeah, so there's a lot of pieces behind this.
So yes. So is it mainly for in-home healthcare, or do you use it in like assisted living and memory care and stuff like that as well?
So I really created it for in-home care, right? People want to age. This gives them the ability to age in place longer, to allow families to support them, to give them independence longer. But as people are aging, actually, we're finding that families want this in assisted livings, right? There's a lot of issues. You're nervous. You don't know what's going on. And so we are slowly moving into that kind of assisted living facilities. And it is a new move for us. And I think it will be really helpful for families who are leaving their loved ones in a place they're unsure about.
Yeah. Yeah. My father was in memory care, and it was, you know, like they did a decent job, but like we didn't really know, you know, we didn't really know what was going on. We came in, it seemed okay, but yeah, they just wore like a little locket. So if they went up to the door and tried to walk out of the door would not open, right? But I didn't know anything about the actual care that they were getting. So yeah, that could be really, really helpful.
And in those cases, it's really hard because your loved one might not be able to tell you what's happening or not happening. And there is a sense of compliance that happens. We did a lot of testing. And a lot of our testing early on was in nursing home situations. And we have been able to prove that we can improve compliance. We can ensure that the tasks are done. Nice. And in the situations of memory care, especially if you need to toilet or turn someone, those are essential in well-being. Those are essential in preventing bed sores, right? So those were actually our big research studies were around those. And we're able to prevent those with the proper care.
That's awesome. How did you, I mean, obviously there was a need for it. How did you like develop your prototype? How did you like find who was going to manufacture it for you? I have so many like product questions.
It was tough. It is hard.
Yeah.
I remember my first time pitching early on, like pitching it when it was just an idea. And because I had an investor community that I knew, and they're like, hardware's hard. You don't understand how hard. And I was like, silly, it can't be that hard. Hardware is hard.
Yeah, there's a reason everybody does software.
Value chains are hard. Manufacturing, everything is challenging, right? Especially value chains. That was really a complicated thing.
What are value chains? What are
how you're sourcing your materials.
Okay.
Because unfortunately, they do not make these chips here in the United States. There's no way to get our chips. Nobody manufactures smartwatches that you can turn into your own. And I was really fortunate. I'm going to give him a shout out. My CTO's name is Andy. He's been with me since 2017. And he just had really great connections. And our lead investor is actually a manufacturer. And so there was a manufacturer here in town who was able to do all of the stuff stateside. So he helps to procure everything in China. He already was doing those kind of value chain things. And we got really lucky with how we put the company together and the people involved. And so I think a lot of it was luck because I think I was too dumb to realize it. I didn't have enough knowledge early on to realize how hard it was.
You know, the difference between courageous and stupid is just the outcome.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
And I really like, I sometimes go, it is amazing I got to here. Like I have investors I talk to, they're like, that's incredible that you have a product that's in the market. I'm like, I see that now. I see the challenges we had to get over it. And I've just been really thankful for the people around me who've helped make sure that we've gotten here.
And if you believed them, you would not have ever done it.
Yeah. So and it is. It's a great team. That's the most important thing anyone can have around them.
That's so cool. So in order to, this is turning into a full-on business conversation, but I do want to go back a little bit to the personal in a minute. But so because you were professionally in healthcare for so long, like nursing care, mm-hmm. did you like utilize that? Because I know I've known people who've tried to sell things to hospitals and the sales cycle is like 3 years long.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you overcome that? Or did you?
So we've not gotten into hospital.
Okay, because you're doing home health.
We've taken an interesting approach. We've gotten doctors to be our biggest referral source and through the Cleveland Clinic. And we're actually doing a trial with our devices at the Cleveland Clinic, a research project. And I will tell you, it's like friendship nepotism, whatever that word would be, is how I got to that. I'm going to be totally honest with it. I had some really good friends who were doctors in the system who really helped me along the way creating the product, making sure what it was. So when there was finally a product, they were proud to stand behind it and were proud to take it into the hospital system as not selling it to the system, but actually making it as a referral source, showing the doctors what it did so it could be something that they could refer out to their families.
Yes. And everyone, this is a great example of why when you start a new thing, you don't like keep it in the closet until you think it's completely and totally done, because you can gather, you know, advocates along the way who help you, who are invested in it and who believe in it and have, you know, some attachment there.
Yeah. I think if you would put out the most perfect product you would imagine with every bell and whistle, it's going to be hidden under your carpet for a really long time. And one thing I learned is some of the things you think that absolutely have to be there may not interest your future clients
right
at all. So put out your MVP, your minimal viable product, and let people play with it and see what they say. Our minimal viable product that we had prior to COVID that we were putting in nursing homes were the ugliest things you've ever seen in your entire life. We literally were taking the sensors that were in the watch and we were screwing them together in these little plastic housings. They were horrible. And we put them on chains. And we were like, we have to test with something. And if I wait till I have a product, I'll never know if it's worth it. So we were taking the most rudimentary kind of external components and throwing them on caregivers and saying, does it work? So if I would have been, and they knew it was ugly, right? And if I would have been like, no, it has to look nice for them, we would never have gotten all that really beautiful data to know how important and how much we could actually impact our demographic.
Right. Yeah. I talked with, I have a friend who said, actually, I interviewed her like a couple months back, and she said, perfectionism is the highest form of self-violence.
Yes. It makes us mean to ourselves too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it that you were just like, it's ugly. We've got to test it, because if you're going to spend more money in development and you're going to put more time in it, you got to make sure that it's meeting the needs of your users.
Absolutely. And it was some big learnings for us. And we just were like, sorry, it's ugly. That's really That was what I said to everyone. Sorry, it's ugly.
Yeah. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you. So back a little bit to the personal stuff. What was the kind of the turning point for you when you were like, I mean, I'm going to guess I know what it is, but where you were like, no, I have to be my own. I have to be my own entrepreneur. I have to, like, a normal life is not for me.
So it's going to go back to stupidity. So my first startup, I actually did in my early 20s.
Huh?
It was a fail. It was like total fail. And it's going back to the time where there was no such thing as MySpace. I mean, no such thing as Facebook. Like, MySpace was kind of new. And I was like, I'm going to create a MySpace for writers because that's what they need, because I really love to write. And I learned how to code and I learned how to build it. And I'm so glad I learned how to do that because I learned so much about technology. I did the boot camps. I did every program you could take. I learned a lot to build that project. I put it up. And then I learned that nobody in the whole world was going to pay for it, especially then, right? That was not something, we didn't pay for software as a service, wasn't a thing. And then I ended up getting some investment dollars to help grow it. Servers were expensive, and then I kind of just never was able to figure out how to monetize it. And so put a lot of money in, keeping it alive. Servers were expensive then. And it died. At some point, it got too expensive to keep alive.
Yeah.
And so that was actually my first step into, I'm going to do this technology thing. And then I did a second one that was sort of a spinoff. That one was venture-backed. We had money in it. And then that one failed too. But we were able to have an asset sale. So, you know, like the background removal stuff you see in things, you know, like Zoom's background removal.
Sure, sure.
I had the patents on those. I was never able to get the technology to work, but I had a bunch of the patents on what some of that stuff was. So a company came in and bought the patents. So it was like a kind of last minute save with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I am never, ever, ever doing a startup again. Bad at this. I'm going back to caring like that. That was kind of my journey. And then when this happened with my grandma and I had this idea of how I envisioned this product to work, I said to my dad, I'm like, I got a new idea. And he was like, oh, but I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's such a clear need. You know, it's not, I mean, my father had Alzheimer's, when he started getting bad, I was like, we need an Apple Watch so we can tell if he fell. That was just like a normal thing, you know, but it sounds like yours, you have like a way more granular kind of situation. Yeah.
Well, and so fall detection on the wrist is really bad.
Do tell.
So anyone who says, did you notice you got a lot of false positives when you?
No, because by that point he wasn't walking around very much.
Okay. So to get actual like true fault, like they're to get it, you're looking at a lot of false negatives. So you're going to get a lot of kind of buzzing when it doesn't happen. I told you, I think before the call, I take care of some elderly folks. I help them do different things now. And it's my joy. So I have this one woman. And she is in her mid-90s, and she likes to go swim at the local, like, YMCA. And she has a fall detection. She's got the same one on her wrist. And so someone had driven her. I was not the one this day who took her, but she had gone swimming, and she had put her fall detection device in her shoe. And she, like, dropped it in her shoe so she could take a shower after. She didn't realize that it went off. And she couldn't hear because someone was helping her to the shower. She couldn't hear the, hello, are you okay? Are you okay? So they send EMS out.
No.
And so she's
we never had that set up. That's crazy.
Yeah. So hers was more like a life alert. And she said that she'd never been so embarrassed in her life. She goes, because these handsome firemen came rushing in. She goes, because she had a false positive.
Yeah.
And so those stories are more often than not because it's just not there yet. So we don't do automatic fall detection because what we have found is that you kind of become immune to alerts. We're all immune to the dinging on the phone, right?
Yeah.
And we don't want that to happen. So we have a help request button and we're working on a fall detection that's actually going to be located on the hip. That's really accurate because there's a lot of other pieces that go into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. You could even just hit your wrist against something. Probably.
Or you could raise your hand and drop it down, and then you're going to be buzzing.
Yeah. How does that impact, like, what's the result of that for, I wonder, for, like, local emergency services. That must be horrible. Like, people who actually need an ambulance aren't getting it because the firemen are busy rushing in to help the woman in the locker room who's in the shower.
I've seen it happen. That was just a one because it was sort of like, if poor lady, she was embarrassing. But I've actually been at events where there are people who've had it and they didn't hear it and the firemen have come rushing in and I've talked to them. I'm like, is this a thing? And they're like, it's a thing. Yeah. I was like, okay. And they're like, well, it'd be better than her staying on the floor. And I was like, that's a great outlook, but there has to be something better because it also scares them when someone comes running in going, are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah. Huh. I wonder what the long-term effect of that is going to be, if they're going to just turn that off entirely, because it seems like a high cost to pay. You know, it's not cheap to get a fire truck out somewhere or an ambulance or both.
That's why I think typically most of these devices, those like larger company ones, they have like a speaker on it. That's why they're really large. And they say, hello, are you okay? And then if you don't respond, then they send someone. Now, a lot of people are hard of hearing. Or if you're in a loud room, or if you're in the locker room shower, you're not going to hear those things. But I think in the next few years, technology will start to catch up. But we're just... most folks aren't there yet. And we did like crazy fall testing. And it really took us the understanding of to get real accuracy, to make sure you don't miss a fall, you're going to get a lot of false positives.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So what's your distribution right now? How many units do you have out? And I'm assuming it's like a subscription model, right?
It is. So our units are free. We give the hardware away for free. We feel like it really needs to be a light decision-making process for families. And with that, there is a monthly fee, but hardware breaks. Mom lost the watch and it was turned off and we can't find it. We send you new hardware, new watches whenever it's needed. And so it is part built into our fee and we have really great customer service. So we are there to walk you through things when things don't work. It is not a ticket. It's a give us a call and we'll get on a Zoom with you if we have to make sure that we're taking care of you and getting you back up and running really quickly.
And what do you do about user privacy?
We're HIPAA compliant. Everything is de-identified on our end. You actually don't even have to give us your loved one's name. You can just call it Mom.
That's clever. Okay. Yeah, because I do think that I've seen a brochure for your device, actually. Mm-hmm. Maybe last year, I had a friend who was showing me something like that. And I was like, somebody knows exactly where, you know, my mom is going like all the time. It feels a little, you know.
And we built it specifically in mind that we were eventually going to hit assisted living. So you can just name it a room number. We don't need like any personal identification for what we use.
Right. Yeah, all you'd need is, you know, somebody to have access, right?
Yeah.
You could name it XYZ497.
Yeah, you just have to tell us. We actually more need the numbers on the back of your gateway. That's how we help service you. So and you have to give us a big string of numbers.
Yeah. So did you tell me how many you have out in the field now?
So we've got a lot out in the field. We are running low right now on what we have stateside. We have a new order in. And so that new order should be in about 2 months. You know, we run into Chinese New Year and stuff. So right now, but we should have in about 2 months or so, a brand new order.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. It just sounds like it's such a hot topic, you know, as people are aging and living longer and being healthy longer, and also us, we have the facilities to take care of them in a different way that I think than we ever have.
Yeah, I think there are new ways, but I think people are going to continue to want to be at home, and really understanding what that looks like because home care is expensive, and how are families going to intervene, and what is their bandwidth for that kind of care? Because again, back to the sandwich generation, what does that look like? And actually, that kind of leads perfectly into LT CareNav, is if you have a plan, you can stay home longer. Like, there's a lot of things that go when you have a really good plan in place. And I would encourage everyone to really start looking at what long-term care planning looks like so you can have the end result that you want. If you want to be at home and you're preparing for that, it's a better option. You'll have more likely to get what you want out of your care if you're planning for it.
Yeah. Long-term care, I think, is another one of those things like life insurance that nobody wants to talk about, but you'll be glad you did, you know?
And I think there's a lot of misconceptions. People think, oh, I have to get long-term care insurance. That's going to cost me so much money. And what if I don't need care? There are so many options other than just long-term care insurance. If that doesn't fit into your needs, even just having a plan with your family of like, this is what I want. This is how I see it unfolding. Where do you fit in? How much can you help? What is your plan? Really talking through all of these things. So I think a lot of people, when they think about that long-term care planning, it goes immediately to that care insurance. And it doesn't have to. There are so many options that you can use that fit into your lifestyle today to improve your lifestyle tomorrow.
Yeah. So what is the actual, so LT Care Nav is, so what is that? Is that actually a service?
It's a totally free service for families. And it actually came out of all my experiences of years of putting in care blooms into people's homes.
Years of putting what into people's homes?
I was putting care bloom. I actually, early on, I was like the installer. And so as I was installing, I learned a lot from families that this is a great tool, but how do I know when mom needs memory care or the next steps? How much is it going to cost? How am I going to afford it? And who's going to help me? And then their last question was always like, will you help me? I was like, well, I would love to help you and I'm happy to be your sounding board, but I'm not the help you need.
Yeah.
And so I built LT Care Nav to really answer all of those questions. So we help you create a plan, understand your care trajectory, what that looks like, when you might need care. We tell you what it's going to cost based off of where you're living, the kind of care you're going to need based off of your physical well-being. And then we help you understand different ways of paying for it, not just long-term care insurance, because if you don't plan long enough in advance, that's not an option anyway. We go through lots of options to help you understand what is out there. And then I think the thing that we do that's really the most beautiful piece of everything is we connect you to providers who we have vetted. This isn't like a Google's Places. This is like in a couple months, you'll be able to see I'm doing podcasts with every professional on the page. So you can actually see my interview process with them. And then we make matches, not lead generation, not some random posting. It is a beautifully curated match that our system has decided is the right person for you.
Wow. That's great. And there's no charge for this?
There's no charge to families, no. So because there's such a vetting process for the providers to be part of our ecosystem, they're picking up all the costs to keep it free for families because that's super important to me because families have enough to worry about.
Yeah.
So I want to be an easy decision and them to know that like we're really here to just support you.
That is so, so clever because I think that, you know, like even if you plan for when you're going to need care, there can come a time when suddenly you need care and navigating the tangled fucking mess that is our medical system. That was a called for F-bomb. Especially when you're emotional and you're tired and somebody you love is hurt or, you know, in pain, it's unbelievably hard, even for the people who are professional at navigating.
Yeah, it is. It is really a challenge. And when you're in crisis mode, you panic. You don't always make the best decisions on who to pick. And we want you to know that if it's coming from us, this is the best decision. This is the decision I would have made if I was in your situation. In the city you live in, and these are who I talk to, not in crisis mode. So when I make the recommendation, it really is the right person.
And so are you personally the person who's vetting all these people?
I know it's not scalable. It's not a scalable business model. But right now, until this is really important to me, we're launching this next month, at the end of this month. And it was really important that I could stand by every single person on here. And that will be a mission going forward, if it might have to be somebody who I have dedicated to do that. But as of right now, I've talked to everybody.
Wow. Well, nobody could say you weren't ambitious because I love talking to people. I don't know if I'd want to have it in my docket to talk to so many people.
Yeah, no, there was like, I was starting super early in the morning and then people, because it goes to California, I was ending pretty late at night. So actually that time difference, because I'm Eastern Standard Time, that actual 3 hours, I was like, look, I have three more hours in the day. So I know, the long days.
Wow, 11-hour days.
Yes, been some.
Well, what would you say to listeners? I mean, obviously, I know you're going to say, do some long-term care planning.
Yeah.
Right. But what would you say to listeners that they should know about if they're kind of just in the beginning stages of, you know, this kind of caregiving and advocacy journey? What would you say to them that maybe they wouldn't expect that they're going to have to deal with or know about?
Family conflict, I think, becomes a big thing. So what I would tell everyone is sit down with your loved ones. Have an honest conversation. Have an honest conversation with yourself first, right? One, if I'm the one who's going to need care, what do I really want that to look like? What kind of expectations do I have? Where do I want to be? What part do I want to play in my care journey? The more you consider this and the more you start to think about it, the more autonomy you are going to keep as you move forward into these later years, which is, I think, everyone's biggest fear. Like, I'm going to lose control. Having that real honest conversation with yourself, being realistic, your answer can't be, I don't want to go to a nursing home. It has to be, well, what does it look like if my family can't provide care for me at home? And then have that conversation with your family. Because once you become care partners instead of a caregiver, it's going to change the dynamic. And it's going to make sure you can keep your primary relationship intact, like mother and daughter prior to caregiver and care recipient. So those would actually be the things I would say even before coming up with a plan. Understand what your wants are and your needs are and how it works within your family.
Did you say you had some psychology training?
I don't have psychology training.
I thought you did. And I was like, well, that makes sense. But you know, that's a really interesting thing. And I think that's something where we're talking about like the loss of dignity, where that's what it's about, where people feel so helpless, you know?
Yeah. And so it's not psychology training. I think this is really about supporting caregivers and really understanding what we all need as human beings, right? Because that is the one thing we still are from start to finish with this, and making sure those needs are met while you can still articulate it, right? If you could have had that conversation with your dad so you could have known what he really wanted prior, wouldn't it make
sense? He refused to have that conversation, which happens, right? It happens.
It does. And what ends up happening, though, was when he gets to those later stages, especially dementias, you make the calls.
Yeah.
Right? That's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Gee. You give me a lot to think about. Did you have any questions for me?
So if you could go back and do one thing different on your care journey, what do you think that would have been?
It probably would be what we just talked about, is to actually like sit down with my dad and force him to like not leave until he talked about it. Because yeah, we got to a point and we didn't know what his wishes were because he wasn't able to talk about them. I think that's probably, although it would have been tough to kind of come up with that ahead of time. Like, when do you know when they should stop driving? When do you know? Yeah, that was a big one. That was a big one for him. But again, you know, my mom was like, well, he came home okay. He didn't hit anything. And I was like, we don't know. He didn't hit anything.
That is very true. Be like, mom, did you look at the car?
Right? He could have hit a bush. But yeah, I would say that would probably be it. Just the communication around what he would have wanted.
And I hope between, especially LT Care and Av, that we can really kind of facilitate these dialogues between families. Because you're right, like, as your dad didn't want to talk about that might happen, but really framing it in a way of like, let's be partners in here, because it's not if, it's when.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm so glad we talked today. Like I said, you've given me a lot to think about. Oh, it's such a serious issue. And I think that's why people shy away from it. But it's one of those things that you can really, can really help you so much to have some foresight.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope like your listening audience understands too, when you're already the sandwich generation, be kind to yourself. And if you haven't had these conversations and you're past the point where that can really happen, just understand whatever decision you make is going to be the right one when you don't have that input. So just trust what you're doing, because it's most likely coming from a place of love and trying to do the right thing. Because those are sometimes hard to see when you're making big decisions that might not make people happy.
Yeah, you're so driven by your big heart. I think it's really sweet.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking with us. And how can people find you online?
So if you go to ltcarenav.com/podcasts with an S. So maybe you can put in below. They're actually giving to listeners, there'll be a 25% off coupon for the monthly fee for Care Bloom. And we are also giving away a free ebook, Plan Today, Protect Tomorrow, to give you some like basic understandings and how to start dialogues with family.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much. That's so great. It was so awesome to talk with you, Lindsay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for watching today. I'm glad you watched the whole thing. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you.